It's Open Air on the Rhythm and News service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're also streaming live online at ijpr.org. I'm Eric Thiel. It's about 18 minutes after 2 o'clock, and I am joined in the studio by Pato Bantam and band. Welcome, Pato.
Thank you.
Thanks for dropping by.
My pleasure to be here.
We're going to hear some music. You are in concert tonight at Culture Works in Ashland. Doors open at 8 o'clock. The show starts right around 8:30. Mm-hmm. Information at culture-works.net. That's the website for the venue. Let me talk about early years for you. How you got started in music, and specifically how you got started in reggae music.
I was born in London. My dad was from Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica. And he came over to the UK with a sound system called V-Rocket High Power. And I remember at the age of 8, you know, asking if I could help out, you know, with the late night parties on the weekend. And my first job working with the sound was being the security at the age of 8, opening and closing the door all night. And basically grew up, you know, around the sound system. By the time I was 13, I was going on the microphone, you know, just imitating the Jamaican DJs. And then eventually, you know, I started to do my own thing and got a name for myself in my community.
So were you a tough guy at age 8, running security?
No, I think I was more of a smart guy. That's how I got my nickname, Patu, you know, which in Jamaica is an owl, you know, a small owl that comes out at night and goes, Patu, Patu. And so they, because I was so small and I was up so late at night, they called me a Patu.
I remember reading online that there was a period of time where it was a little tough sometimes for English reggae artists to be accepted by the reggae community, that there was sort of this backlash. What was that like for you? And can you elaborate a little bit on the toughness of kind of making a name for yourself doing music that was associated with Jamaica, not England?
It was very, very tough. Because at that time, reggae music was still very, very fresh. And there was no such thing as a reggae act outside of Jamaica. So for us as the, you know, first generation of blacks, Jamaicans born in the UK, to start creating our own brand of reggae music was kind of strange. Not so much for the local community, you know. The local community was into it. They was feeling it. It was more of the establishment, you know, the radio DJs, the people in the position to get the music out, you know, the magazines, you know, the media. And even the Jamaicans were not so resilient to, you know, hearing, you know, interpretation of their music from another country. And even though we considered ourselves Jamaicans born in England, it was still tough for us to get our music accepted. But I think it became such a big wave in the UK when you had bands like Steel Pulse, Aswad, then UB40, you know, then the whole wave of British MCs like Tipper Irie, Smiley Culture, Maka B, you know, the list, Papa Levi. And then we started, you know, going into the mainstream charts with our music too, which kind of, you know, put the seal on it. You know, and then when we started leaving England and going to Jamaica to perform on their big events, we were very warmly accepted. So it didn't take too long, but it was a very tough struggle at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, let's hear a tune.
All right. I got a song I'd like to start with called Heal This World from my new album, Destination Paradise.
Wake up, a new day is dawning. Gather up the people, make we cease the warring. No, let's stop the gunshots, the bombing. Blood is overflowing and the earth is calling out. Mama Earth is in a state of emergency. Pollution of the air, the land and seas. The planetary ozone is like a war zone, and it affects us globally. We need a better infrastructure, renewable energy and agriculture. Plant seeds, give back to nature. We need to do it sooner rather than later. Let's get together now. Let's get together now. Let's get together now and heal this world. Yeah. Let's get together now. Let's get together now. Let's get together now and heal this world. Yeah.
Yo. I'm feeling pain as deep as it can get. We can bleed and sweat. Need to give my people self-respect. We ain't leaving yet. Need to get together, make it better from now until forever. Change the weather and never say never, cause we can conquer whatever we wanna do. It don't take a crew, just a little piece of me and you. There's natural resources, we need to try them by using the alternative solutions like hemp. Bless the little youth them, guide them on their way. We can fix tomorrow for them if we recognize today. We can heal this world. I know it ain't that tough. Remember, one world is enough. Rough.
Let's get together now. Let's get together now. Let's get together now and heal this world. Yeah. Let's get together now. Let's get together now. Let's get together now, this time, and heal this world, yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's live music on Open Air on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Also online at ijpr.org. Ponto Benton and band live in concert tonight at Culture Works in Ashland at 8:30. Just before the tune, you mentioned a couple of songs that kind of crossed over into the pop music world. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of fortuitous events in the mid-90s. Yes. One was a collaboration with some of the guys from UB40.
Yes.
Another was a collaboration with Sting.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, this reggae music being made by a guy from the UK that hadn't been accepted all that well is all of a sudden on the top charts, not only in the UK, but in many countries.
Yes.
What was that ride like for you? And did you even understand the magnitude of what was happening to this music that you had helped create?
No, I really had no idea. You know, sometimes when you're in the middle of the wave, you can't really appreciate the beauty of it. You're just being thrown along or dragged along, and sometimes you manage to ride it for a while. It wasn't until maybe about 2-3 years later when I really had a chance to sit down and reflect that I really realized what had just happened, you know. And when I was able to do a world tour with Peter Gabriel's organization WOMAD and ended up going to Singapore, Malaysia, South Africa, Australia, South America, you know, and really realized the impact that the music had made all around the world, that's when it really hit home.
You mentioned the Peter Gabriel tour that you were on, and this was not only a time where you were recognizing the fans that you had around the world, but this was also seemingly the first time that you started really doing some community outreach and connecting with individuals.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how that got started and what you were involved with.
Well, it was very interesting for me because up until that point, going on tour was really a matter of rehearsing with the band. You know, going on stage, doing our show, coming off stage, you know, maybe signing a few autographs. Mm-hmm. That was it. Peter Gabriel is a very awesome, awesome person. And community work and outreach and helping people is a big thing for him and his crew. And I remember before we started the tour, I got a phone call from someone in his office saying, "Pato, you know, would you be interested in doing workshops and outreach?" And I had no idea at that point what that was about. And I was like, yeah, you know, if anything that's gonna, you know, enhance what we're doing. And once we hit the road, and I think the first place we went to was Canary Islands. And there I was thinking I was gonna do a workshop at the gig, you know, backstage or somewhere. And they actually put me in a car and took me to one of the toughest prisons in the Canary Islands. Mm. And I dragged a couple of my musicians along with me like I have done today. And when we went into the prison, it was like just these very, very hardcore young men, you know, just looking at us like, what are you doing here? You know, have you come to try and convert us or whatever? And it was very nerve-wracking. And I remember as soon as we started playing some music, the whole vibe of everybody's face just softened. And then it went from not a snarl or a, you know, a smirk to a soft smile to big grins to getting them all to sing along with us. And then we got some of them to come and try out the instruments too. And by the time we left that prison, I think we really had made some new friends, you know. And I spoke about my experiences as a kid going to prison. So they were in shock, you know, even the WOMAD people were in shock, because they didn't know I had any prison experience. And, you know, on my reflection of what I went through as a young person, they could relate to that. And it was a very, very awesome experience. And then I remember going from there to Singapore, Malaysia. And then what touched me probably the most on that trip was going to Soweto, South Africa. And I'd always sung songs about apartheid, you know, and ending apartheid. And always, you know, been fighting for the release of Nelson Mandela. And then to actually be able to go to that country and go to the poorest township where so much sad things had happened and reach out to, like, I think it was something about 80 young children came out, you know, teenagers and young kids came out. They actually had a marching band there. And we related how reggae could be incorporated into their marching music. Mm. And then some of the teachers there actually became close friends with me. And after that WOMAD tour, I went back to England and started doing community work and actually became the head of music, the head of a music department at a college, and invited two of the teachers from the South African township to come to my college. And we taught them how to use music technology and sent them back to Soweto with two laptops with all the latest software so they could go and make some killer music on the computer with
That's
the
great.
Kids.
It's a whole new level of the power of music.
Yes.
Right?
So, you know, that was a big turning point that taught me how you can switch from just being in the music industry to also doing music ministry.
Mm-hmm. Pato Banton is my guest live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We'll take a quick break and be back with more live music. We're back live on Open Air with Pato Banton and members of his band in concert tonight at Culture Works. Doors open at 8 o'clock. Pato, sometime in the early 2000s, it seems, looking over the trajectory of your career and the lyrical content of some of your songs and your community involvement, that sometime around the early 2000s, you seem to have had some sort of spiritual awakening in yourself. Was that something that had been a part of you all along, or was this sort of a newfound spirituality that you wanted to try to express in your music and in your work outside of music?
Mm-hmm. I think it was a part of me from the beginning. My very, very first album that I ever did was with a producer by the name of Mad Professor. And before that point, I had done a lot of singles, you know, for Fashion Records, for Greensleeves Records, for Island Records. But all the singles that I had ever released, they all wanted me to be a big chart success. Mm-hmm. So when I went to do record auditions at the labels, I would present them with a list of songs, some political, some spiritual, some fun. And they would always want the fun songs. Mm. And it kind of left me feeling, after about my seventh or eighth single of just humorous, fun stuff, that I wasn't being able to express my spiritual side. So when I worked with Mad Professor, I really focused on my political and spiritual approach and thoughts. And then when I went to, moved over to America, I did like maybe 10 albums with IRS Records, you know, Miles Copeland, Sting's manager. And a lot of my spiritual and political side, I had plenty of time to express during that 10-year period. But it was always kept kind of underground, you know, and I had like this underground cult following of people who really believed in my message, who followed me. But when I went back to England, everyone over there only knew me for my humorous side. And it was kind of ironic that after doing 10 albums for IRS, they asked me to do like a commercials song. And I, you know, I said, okay, after a long debate, and UB40 came along and did a song with me as a duet, which was Baby Come Back. So here I was coming back after 10 years away from the UK, hopefully coming back to share my serious side. And then boom, the one song on my album, you know, which was really commercial, was the one that took off. Before I even got home from tour, it was in the charts, you know, rising up the charts.
That must have felt really weird to have had a fan base in the UK that were fans of who you were, and fans in the US that were fans of who you are.
Yes.
And having to make that connection and kind of bring everybody back together.
Yes. Right? Well, I never did ever manage to do that. Because as soon as I got back to England, Baby Come Back with UB40 was at number one for 4 weeks. The song sold something like 30 million copies. But it was never released in America. So my American fans never saw me with a pop hit. But the UK fans did, and the European fans and the Brazilian fans. Then following up after that, I did a song with Sting, which was a big pop hit. Then I did a song with Rankin Roger from the English Beat called Bubbling Hot, which was another fun song. Then I went back and did another song with Sting. And then I did another cover called Groovin'. So all of these five big hits were all in the UK. None of them were really ever released in America. So after like 3 years of, you know, putting out chart hits, I went to the record company and says, okay, guys, you know, I've given you what you want. Now I'd like to put out something that represents who I am and where I am right now. And they said, no, we don't want to hear that. You know, we want some more commercial music. And not only do we want some more commercial music, we want a scandal. And they set up some interviews with me with some of the media in the UK. And they all wanted either a sex scandal or a drug scandal from me. But at that time, I was a parent. You know, I was raising my children. I was reading spiritual books. I was at home early every night. So I never had anything to give them. So some of the media actually went and fabricated. I tried to fabricate a sex scandal with me being a pimp. And some girl who they got to say I was her pimp daddy, you know, retracted her story. And I was just kind of over it at that time because, you know, at the same time, there was other bands who were just signed and they were all giving out, you know, alcoholic scandals, cocaine scandals, sex scandals, just so that they could get into the media. But I was like, I'm a parent, you know, I don't want my kids looking at me in the media involved in some scandal, especially one that's not even true. So I basically quit my major label with Virgin. I went into their office and told them I'm over it. And they thankfully let me go, you know. And I went into my own home studio and recorded an album called Life is a Miracle. And lo and behold, I got a Grammy nomination in the USA for an album that I recorded with no label involvement.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And it was a great moment for me because it made me feel as though here I am recording something from my heart. It's spiritual. It's got a message. It's talking about world issues, social issues, and it's getting respected. And that was a big turning point for me.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned your kids, and if what I read is correct, your mom has also had a bit of an influence on your music. And I want to ask you about that, but first, can we hear another tune?
Yes, I'd like to. But Beans, as you mentioned, my mom, I'd like to do one that I wrote for my mom. This one is called Gwan. And in Jamaica, Gwan means go on, you can do it. Gwan. And my mom always used to say to me, Gwan, man, just Gwan. Anything you want, son, just Gwan. You ready? All right. Now anywhere me go, the people them tell me to go on. So right now Mr. Bantan come for nice up the land. Go on, it name go on, go on, it name go on. It name go on,
Gwan, it name Gwan. It name Gwan. G-W-A-R-N spells Gwan. S-T-O-R-M spells Stam. After a Stam, there must be a C-A-L-M. Sekul, sekul, it name calm. Cool as a cucumber when me at the mic. Stand up the lead woman and put the mic in me palm. The rich choo-choo from me mouth like a locomotion. When them love it, them show appreciation. All the women start to R-U-S-H-I, man. And all of me brethren, I tell me fi just Gwan, Gwan. It name Gwan. It name Gwan. Gwan. It name Gwan. Listen up. It name Gwan. My mommy show me loving from the day I was born. Fill my belly, clean my potty, wrap me up, keep me warm. She opened up the Bible and the 23rd Psalm and put it in my cart for spiritual protection. My mommy raised the babies, my daddy raised M-O-N-E-Y. My daddy raised corn. I got infant, junior, secondary education. Got expelled in the fourth, never took no exam. Tried a couple jobs, but them never last long. One day, my mommy asked me this one question. Boy, what you are gonna do when you turn a big man? Me say, mommy, you should listen. Don't get me wrong, I'm not gonna be a worker or a politician. I'll be an MC, a singer, a nice up the land. She smiled, she kissed me, she wrapped me in her arms. She said, if it's that you want to do, then boy, you feel just one. It name Gwan. Every mickle make a muckle. Every muckle make a mickle. Poop a pato a principle. Ride bicycle, not tricycle. Glee woman, you feel sickle. Me no want no girl with freckle. I girl that miserable, for that would be so terrible. To judge a I am favor, thanks and pray they are essential. I'm devil, I am careful, cause I know it is so evil. A lot of rich people, they give praise to the devil. And even now, but with your land, true judge, that is a bumble. Before me come out, that's a man that's strictly redactable. Well, I open the door, but the boss must to make them look beautiful. A little bit only just to fix your potos vocal. This after that to jump up pass and wiggle and jiggle 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 and dance. People see me dance, they might tell me fi just Gwan, Gwan. It name Gwan. To be continued.
Pato Banton live on open air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Our live sessions are starting to develop their own dictionary. We had Ubuntu, right, from Vuzimalasela, and now we have Gwan from Pato Banton. So we talked about your mom, yes. And a lot of reggae songs tend to focus on drugs, mm-hmm. or violence, and yours have a different focus. And from what I understand, some of that has to do with your mom.
Yes, it does, a lot. Ever since, you know, being involved with my dad's sound system, and my mom was always there too, you know. It was really a family sound system. Anytime I went on the microphone, I always used to say to myself, anything I'm going to record, I must be able to bring that recording to my mom. I don't want to ever say anything in the microphone that my mom would be ashamed of or that I would be embarrassed about. And it was kind of strange because there was a time in the MC world of reggae music where singing about girls and rude things about girls and about violence was popular. And by not going along with that, you know, stream of things, I was at risk of, you know, becoming a thing of the past because everybody was only listening to that style of lyric. And I made a stand, you know, right there and then, that whatever I was going to say was going to be positive. And whatever I was going to say was going to be something that I could really share with my family. And I never look back and I have no regrets.
What's your take on the state of reggae music today?
It's interesting, you know, it's diverse. Mm. It's so diverse, it's hard to keep track of the different avenues and genres of reggae music now, you know. But what is interesting to me, really, more so than anything, is really two things that is very interesting to me. Number one is all of the different bands, reggae bands from the different parts of the world who play reggae music just as good and mm-hmm. sometimes if not even better than reggae that's coming out of Jamaica.
And do you think they're dealing with the same lack of credibility that
oh,
you had?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, whenever I was recently in South America and some of those Brazilian bands are amazing. The Hawaiian reggae is amazing. Some of those white European reggae artists now, like Gentlemen, are so awesome. It's amazing. But exactly the same thing happens, you know. They have the same issues where people within their arena, you know, disrespect them and say, you're not the real deal, you're not Jamaican. But people outside of their country, you know, love what they're doing because of how they sound without any prejudice. So it is a uphill struggle for everybody.
Yeah.
The second thing to me that is amazing and it's like a saga, an ongoing saga, is to watch the development of the Marley children, you know, to see how they've grown and what Bob Marley left behind and how they all have that unique talent where you can see their individual as far as being an artist in their own right, but they have that Marley gene that adds that little touch that is so special, you know? And as a Marley fan myself, you know, to see his children continuing to play music and the way they have taken it into their own different arenas is very interesting to me. I love it.
You are currently on a tour where the goal, at least a goal, is to perform in all 50 states. Is that true?
That is true.
Why? Why is this of interest to you?
I think, like I was saying earlier, ever since I was influenced by the WOMAD tour, and after that, at the end of that tour, actually, two of my sons were shot in a drive-by shooting. And that inspired me to go back to my own community. Because I was saying to myself, here I am touring the world, doing workshops, doing outreach for kids at risk, underprivileged communities. And in my own community, I don't have any time because I'm everywhere else in the world. I've got no time for the kids in my own community who have the same issues as the kids in Soweto, you know? So I decided that at the end of that WOMAD tour, I was going to take a break from touring and give something back to my own community. And I ended up doing that for about 6 years. And when I did that, I developed this love for ministry, for outreach, and for giving, you know. And right now on my musical journey, I'm not so really concerned about the industry or concerned about hits or anything like that. I'm really more concerned about reaching people and touching people's lives. And on our tours, you know, we do foster care centers, we play at prisons, we play at churches, we play at community centers, we do charity gigs, benefits, schools, and as well as concerts and festivals. So it's really going to all the states really is my way of saying, let's go on the road and go on a mission. Mm. Let's try and reach all 50 states with a positive vibe and touch people's lives.
And are you still seeing that same change on people's face?
Yes, yeah. Yes, you know, every single way. I tell you a quick story. Last night, just before we went on stage to perform, I was at the hotel getting ready. And Tony, when we was going into the hotel, Tony told me that some fans wanted me to marry them last night, you know, either before the show or after the show. So I told him to tell him to call me in my hotel room. So they called me and said they was going to get to the show a bit late, but they really wanted me to marry them. So they dragged their mom, put her mom in the car, and halfway up towards the gig, I think they drove about 2 hours or 3 hours, told their mom that they was going to get married en route to the gig. So when they got to the venue, I was looking for them, you know, to see where they were. And when they got to the gig, I saw them in the crowd. And I took a break during the sax solo and gave them a piece of paper with a pen and said, write your names on this. So they wrote their names on it and passed it back to me. And so we did a song called Now Generation. And in the middle of it, it drops down to like a really soft ballad. So I asked the crowd if they would be okay if I introduced two people on stage who wanted to be married. And everybody started screaming, yes, yes, yes. So I invited them up, and during the song, married them right there on stage.
You're kidding.
And it was just crying. All I could see was everybody just bawling. Even some of those big guys that came in looking all tough, just bawling like girls. It was beautiful.
That's
it was
great.
Very, very touching.
Pato Benton is my guest live on Open Air here on Jefferson Public Radio. We've got just a couple of minutes. Can we wrap up with another tune?
Yes, we can. Any songs you guys want to hear?
Whatever you want, buddy.
All right, then. I'd say let's do New Day Dawning. Okay? Let's just go straight into the chorus line. I just want to say it's been a pleasure being here, sharing this vibe with you guys. And hopefully you guys in Ashland come out and see the whole band tonight, all right?
There is a new day dawning. I can hear the angels calling. Oh yes, there is a new day dawning. It's gotta be universal love. Oh yes, there is a new day dawning. I can hear the angels calling. Oh yes, there is a new day dawning. It's gotta be universal love. I heard that faith can move a mountains, yeah. And all you've got to do is believe. I heard a rumor I'm a dreamer. But in this world, you've got to be. How will we cope without hope? How will we fly if we don't try? How will we learn if we won't yearn for understanding? Hey, I gotta know. Hey, I believe there is a new day dawning. I can hear the angels calling. Oh yes, there is a new day dawning. It's gotta be universal love, sweeter love. New day dawning. I can hear the angels calling. Oh yes, there is a new day dawning. It's gotta be, gotta be.
Mix me. New day, everybody ball. Hip hip hooray, new day, everybody ball. No, 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 new day, everybody ball. Hip hip hooray, new day, everybody ball. Now that the spiritual climate is a warming, showers and blessings just keep on falling. I hear the archangels them calling, yo, this is not the time to be stalling. Stop the yawning and you performing. Listen the warning, new day is dawning. A message from the bright and morning star to the people them near and far. New day dawning. I can hear the angels calling. Oh yes, there is a new day dawning. It's gotta be, yeah, yeah. Gotta be, yeah, yeah. Gotta be, yeah, yeah.
Booyaka!
It's Pato Benton live on Open Air. In concert tonight at Culture Works in Ashland. The door opens at 8. The show starts at 8:30. Pato, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, my brother.
Craig Shank continues Open Air right after this.
Respect.